Welcome, everybody. My name is Mary Angela DeGrazia DiTucci. I would like to say how glad I am that you're able to join us on this AGMD Young Adult Telephone Community Support Group meeting. I am a longtime patient with multiple digestive motility disorders, and I'm also a part of AGMD. We typically have Andrew Carbone, who co-facilitates this group. However, we are so privileged to have Brittany, who, and I said her name right,
yes.
Who will be co-facilitating this program today on such short notice. Before we begin, I just want to explain a few things that we would like to encourage you to speak and participate. If you would like to speak, please say your first name every time you speak so that we can match the voice with the person speaking. If you have trouble jumping into the conversation, you can just call out Brittany or Mary Angela. Brittany's a shorter name. And be sure to facilitate you into the conversation. Please do not share any of your personal contact on this program or ask anybody else's. If you would like to communicate with somebody, you can reach out to AGMD and we'll see if we can make that happen for you if all parties involved are willing to do so. Brittany, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, everybody. I am Brittany. I have chronic intestinal pseudo-obstruction, and I have been sick since birth. Due to my pseudo-obstruction and being diagnosed, or being misdiagnosed, I should say, for the first 5 years of my life, I've had all of my colon and 17% of my small bowel removed, resulting in a permanent ileostomy. I am also TPN dependent, which is total parenteral nutrition, and I have a central line, a semi-permanent IV line that goes straight into that gets led straight into the heart to receive all of my nutrition, and I've been on that for all but 6 years of my life. I am grateful for the opportunity to fill in for Andrew today. I know he normally runs these programs. And although I'm very sorry that he's not here, I'm happy to be able to talk with all of you today. If there is anything that anybody would like to speak about today, please just speak up. And like Mary Angela said, if you have a trouble getting through or you feel like you're not being heard, just yell out my name or Mary Angela's and we'll definitely get you heard, because that's what we're here for, is to share experiences and talk about what is on everybody's mind. So I'll start by saying what is on my mind today, amongst other things, is how do you guys handle growing up with a chronic illness and being sick when you're, you know, supposed to be in great health, because everybody thinks, you know, a young adult is, you know, the picture of health. You don't see in, you know, TV commercials or TV shows or in the movies, you know, kids who are sick very often. You see, it's more commonplace to see someone who is older be sick than have someone younger. So is there anyone out there who has anything to discuss about that?
We're just getting some more people on.
Yeah.
So you might want to recap a little bit just in case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just to recap, my name is Brittany. I have pseudo-obstruction and have had it since birth. I welcome everybody here, and I was just talking about how it is growing up with a chronic illness and how you feel about growing up this way, and if there's, you know, benefits that you have found growing up with a chronic illness, or on the other hand, what the negatives that you feel are that impact your life the most. It's a quiet day today, apparently.
Apparently.
Okay, so I'll just share some things that I've gone through. I found the biggest hurdle that I had to overcome growing up with a chronic illness is going to school. And not only the schoolwork, but also being with my peers and having the challenges of a chronic illness and still going to school every day and having to live up to the demands of being in school and what that means. One of the things that I found to kind of push me throughout my school years was I always wanted to graduate with my peers. That was my big goal in life. It didn't matter how sick I was, how much I was in the hospital, how much school I missed, how many, you know, days that I had to go in early or stay late to make up tests, quizzes, etc. I didn't care what I had to do. I wanted to make sure that I graduated with my class. And I was lucky enough to do that. Even though I had, you know, plenty of teachers who made it difficult to do so, I had one teacher in seventh grade who lost an entire month's worth of work that I had done when I was in the hospital. Needless to say, I was really upset about that one. And the principal had to be involved, and my parents were involved, and we ended up eventually getting it straightened out, but it was, I think that was one of the scariest points, because I really thought if she didn't find that work, or if we didn't figure out a way for me to do something to fix that, I knew that I would have to repeat that grade, because that was a lot. It was a time that there was a huge project that was, you know, half of our grade or some ridiculousness like that, and it was an English class, so it was a, you know, main curriculum class, and I was really worried that they were going to hold me back. Luckily, it was all straightened out, but. And then the other big thing that happened to me in school was going into high school. In our state, they do, and I think in most states, but they do the testing to see where you're going to place for high school, you know, what different classes, whether you're honors or regular or this or that. And for science, which was always one of my best subjects because I'm, you know, chronically ill and you learn a lot about science being sick, or at least biology. I tested into honors biology for my freshman year of high school. However, the powers that be decided that I wasn't allowed to be in honors biology because what if I got sick? What would happen? I would fall too far behind. So they didn't let me into honors biology, and I was really upset about that. So upset that my senior year of high school, I turned around and took an advanced biology honors class and aced that class just to show them that they were wrong. Even though they probably didn't know anything about it, but I had to show for myself. And I think that's very important for all of us, is to find something that we can be proud of, that we can strive for, especially if your chronic illness is severe to the point where, you know, you aren't able to work or you know, do things like that. You have to find something that you can strive for and can make a goal of. Because just because you're sick doesn't mean you can't have goals, doesn't mean you can't have plans for your future. I know, speaking to a lot of people that, or not a lot of people, but speaking to some people, the thing that comes up often is making plans. And pardon me if I'm kind of jumping around topics here. And like I said, if anyone wants to talk, just please feel free to speak up. But a lot of people don't want to make plans with friends, peers, family, because, well, what if that day comes and they don't feel good? Or that day comes, they go out with whoever it is, and 10, 15, half hour into it, they get sick. I have found for myself that I still make plans. I make them cautiously. I don't make too many plans where I'm pretty much guaranteed to set myself up for a failure. But I still make plans, and I do, if there is anything that I can do beforehand to make sure that I'm well enough to accomplish those things, I do that. But I also have found as I'm getting older, I will be 32 in April. I found that as I'm getting older, I'm not ashamed to cancel plans. I'm not ashamed to say, you know what, I don't feel good, I can't do this. Or the other thing is changing plans. Just because, you know, you go into something or have plans to do one thing and you aren't able to do it, doesn't mean you can't change those plans and do something else. An example recently was for Valentine's Day. I had plans to celebrate Valentine's Day a few days early, and we had plans to go out to an outlet mall close to our house and to go to dinner afterwards. And we were able to do that, but I knew that if I didn't feel well enough to do that, we could have changed our plans and stayed at home and ordered takeout. Or if I was really bad and not able to eat at all, he could order takeout and I would just, you know, watch the movie or do something else. So if anybody out there feels like talking and sharing about how they change or amend plans, or do you not make plans? Are you afraid to make plans? Today's a really quiet day.
Hi, this is Laura.
Hi, Laura.
As far as plans go, I am not a young adult. I'm a volunteer with the AGMD. However, I have gastroparesis, and I learned that every plan is tentative. Mm-hmm. And every time I make plans of any kind, they have to be okay with, you know, I might have to call you an hour before and go, can't do it. It took a lot to not get to get my doctor's offices even. You can talk to them. And if, you know, because the staff doesn't understand what's wrong with you. You know, only maybe the doctors do. But the staff has no clue, and they have a rule, usually. You don't call, you don't have an appointment, $25-$50 or something. But if you talk to them and say, listen, you know, this happens all the time to me. My whole life, you know, I've canceled more plans than I ever thought I made. You know, it's ridiculous. But I keep having faith because every now and then I feel okay enough to go. And then it's awesome. It makes it a wicked day. But the guilt of canceling is horrible. It really is. And for anybody, I became sick when I was 31. And it was very hard then. I felt I'm older now and it's much easier because I know better. You know, it's I can feel guilty, but I can't go. Too sick, and they're not going to want me there, really. You know, they're all, why am I guilty? I mean, if I went, I would ruin their time because I'd be sick and they'd worry or whatever the case may be. But I feel guilty, and I finally figured out, like, why am I feeling guilty? I would make them miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, you know, and it's, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I feel bad every time I have to, you know, I probably cancel 50% of my things and have to go, you know, redo it, my doctor's mm-hmm. appointments, everything, because I'll just get, you know, sick in a second, you know, one second
yeah.
it's fine. And the next second, you're in the bathroom, throwing up. You know, it's you guys know that. So, it's, you know, but it does get easier over time.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you can, I don't even know how to say it properly, but it's not even so much accept, but the more that you realize that, you know, you are sick, it is not what you are. It's just a part of you, but it's a part that is kind of dominant part of your life. And, you know, I kind of do it when I'm okay. I live life to the fullest. And when I'm sick, I let myself be sick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it took me time, you know, of learning and not wanting to feel guilty and cry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's hard when you're young, yes?
This is Mary Angela. So when you were saying that you weren't sure how to describe it, but what you were describing is acceptance, and it doesn't mean that you're giving in and giving up. It just means that you understand that this is part of your life now. And there were two other points that I wanted to capitalize on. So give my little senior mind time to take out of the file, dust the cobwebs off. One other thing was about if you're starting your journey, it's even harder because so far everybody who's talked, who has spoken, are seasoned disease sufferers, if you will. But if you're beginning the journey, I know it's even harder because you haven't had time to really accept it and you haven't really had time to adjust and figure out what to let go of and what to keep and who's going to understand. And that brings me to the other piece of it. There are going to be some people in your life, be it family members, be it friends, be it coworkers, whatever it may be, that when you have to cancel or that you say, yeah, I can go, you make all the plans and at the last minute have to cancel, they're going to get tired of it or they're not going to understand. And that's part of the acceptance is, as hard as it may be, trying to realize that everybody is different in this world. And perhaps you would never be somebody have been treated, but letting it go is going to be, I guess, freeing for you as opposed to still holding on. And why can't they? Why don't they understand? Why have they abandoned me? Why am I getting so isolated now? Why aren't they inviting me anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mary Angela.
Thank you, and I'm done for the moment.
Okay. This is Brittany again.
We're unpredictable. We may jump in at any moment.
Going off what Mary Angela was saying, too, it's very true. If you're beginning this journey, now I have to give anyone who is beginning this journey a ton of credit because I was born with this disease. When I, you know, do talk to people who have this disease and who are, you know, similar diseases or who are chronically ill and who have become chronically ill in their teen years or in their young adult years, I have to give them an immense amount of credit. I don't know anything different. I was born this way, and I had all of my, my major abdominal surgeries before I was 5 years old. So I am very lucky in the fact that I don't remember any of them. Sure, I have dealt with my fair share of stuff in my life. And I have, you know, had incredibly scary times where I wasn't sure if I was going to be here from one day to the next. But to me, it's like, you know, you being born left-handed or right-handed, it's just part of you. I live my life, you know, doing certain things, like with, like I said, I'm on total parental nutrition. I'm on IV nutrition. So I get hooked up to an IV every night. I get disconnected every morning. It's part of my routine, just like for anyone else, showering is part of their routine. And to me, it's no different. I can't imagine being a teenager or a young adult having to learn how to do those things, take care of yourself, and adding that to, you know, your life and learning how to do all of that along with everything else that you go through, you know, on a daily basis. There is a difference between accepting what you have been given in life and giving into it, like Mary Angela said. I found that I have accepted my disease, but I found that I've had to reaccept it in different phases of my life, as well as having to reaccept it depending on what this disease brings. For me, you know, having pseudo-obstruction, there is no set path for this disease. I don't know what's going to come, you know, tomorrow. I don't know what's going to come 5 years from now. When I was growing up as a little kid, I don't know how to put this because it might sound negative, and I don't want it to sound negative. But growing up, I always knew that I would graduate high school. I always thought I would go to college and graduate college and hopefully, you know, go on to work. That did not come true in my life. But I always thought I'd be around to see that stuff. I never thought that I would live to see past the age of 30. And I don't mean that negatively. I don't mean it because, you know, I just really didn't think it was going to happen. My disease at certain points of my life was very precarious, was to the point where I really didn't know if I was going to live the next 6 months, let alone 6 years. And now, you know, I'll be 32 in a couple of months, and I don't know what this phase of my life is going to bring. And it's actually really freeing. I don't have any expectations for this part of my life. I can do whatever I want, and it's awesome. It really is. And I think a lot of times in life, you have a lot of expectations. And some of that is really good, and you should have expectations for certain things. But I think we put so many expectations on so many areas of our lives that nobody could live up to them. There is no such thing as perfection. We like to think there is, but there really isn't. So unless we're all genetically modified robots, there's never going to be a perfect life. And who says that one person's life is perfect and another one's isn't? You have to be happy. And I think that is what we need to strive for. It isn't strive for perfection. It is strive to be happy. And that's what I found. Selfishly, I have had to make decisions to make myself happy over maybe what would make other people happy. And I like to think that I'm a nice person. I don't know, Mary Angela and Laura might, you know, disagree with that every now and then, but I'm just kidding. But I have had to realize that what will make me happy and what is in the best interest for my life and how I want to live my life needs to be priority. I'm not saying be rude to everybody you meet or not take into account other people's emotions, thoughts, and feelings. I'm just saying that what is best for me and my life and those who are very important to me, you know, might at some points not make somebody else happy, but that's okay. It's about what you need to do for yourself. And I also believe that this disease, or these diseases, pardon me, can take away a lot. And I don't sugarcoat that at all. It takes away jobs. It takes away, you know, education. It takes away friends, family members. But it can give you a lot more than it takes away. And it has given me the outlook of that everyone is different and everyone has the right to be happy with what they want and what they choose to do with their life. I accept people for who they are, and everybody's situation is different, and I like to think that I always keep that in mind when I'm interacting with other people. I've been lucky enough to be given the opportunity to volunteer and do that with my life, which is amazing. And you also find that there's, you know, little things in life that you may not have had the opportunity to do or to meet because, you know, of circumstances, but you do because, you know, you're ill. Just like all of us here on these calls, whether you choose to talk or not, we're all linked. And I've been, you know, lucky enough to find the AGMD, and I got on the call one time and, you know, talked to Mary Angela, and she was the first person that I had ever talked to who was an adult with pseudoobstruction disease. And this was just like 6 months ago. So I lived most of my life, or all of my life to that point, not knowing another person with my disease. And we're lucky now because we can talk to one another and have people who truly understand where we're coming from and what we've been through. We aren't all the exact same. Some people have to do things that others don't, but we all have that link and that commonality that, you know, we're all just trying to do the best that we can for who we are at this moment. I don't know is there anyone out there who has had an opportunity come about from being chronically ill that they might not have had if they were healthy?
Well, Brittany, I'm just going to jump in. This is Mary Angela. And first of all, that was very well said. Oh. Beautifully stated. And I can say when I became really ill, I was 26 years old, and I was engaged in February of that year that we were getting married, and then our marriage ended. And when I began to get sick, the telltale signs, it happened just suddenly. But my husband and I, even as I was getting sick, not to the level that I ended up with, we had dreams of course, the ideal marriage, you have the picket fence, you buy the house, you have kids, we even wanted to travel, we had all of these ideas. And then as every year passed with our marriage, my illness got worse. And then 5 years into the marriage, when we decided, all right, this is the last year we're going to go traveling, and then we're going to start having children and buy that house, everything unraveled. And I'm very blessed that my husband has stayed with me through every tear, every crisis, every test. He's been right there, and he still is. But all of those dreams changed. And I came to life as years passed, and after I mourned the loss of all of those dreams that we were holding tight to, and I even had to give up a career. I was so busy. Every minute was accounted for. I just embraced life. When this, I came to the realization I had to give up my career, I had to give up all of these dreams, and I finally got a diagnosis too, which took 5 years, I realized that I had gained much more and had more blessings than I ever would have realized had I not become ill. And one of those wonderful things in my life was my ability to start this organization by the grace of God, meet so many inspirational people, people who are suffering as patients, family members suffering in spite of all the perhaps not so good medical experiences I had, that I got to have all of these wonderful medical professionals who have helped out with this organization and been a part of it. And though I don't get to travel anymore, and though, you know, I've had to give up that career, my life's purpose changed in such a way that is more magnificent than I could have ever dreamed. And having my husband right there by my side has been huge, and my supportive family. So after you mourn the loss of what you had and you come to terms with, this is what I have, now what can I do to work with it, you will be surprised at how your sense of purpose and your dreams change. You get new dreams, and my dream is, gee, I hope by this day I'm going to be able to do this. And if not, it's okay. I realize that now God has other plans, and I'm trusting that. So that's all I wanted to jump in and say.
Thank you. I agree. You have to mourn the loss of, you know, what you were living, your healthy life, your thoughts, dreams, hopes for that part, but not give up everything. And I also want to say, you know, I talk very, you know, very positively about, you know, living with chronic illness. But I don't want a single person out there to think that I don't have those times where I'm, you know, down and depressed or anxious about what's, you know, what is in my future, or anxious about, you know, my health, because that's so false. And I don't want anybody to think that way about me, only because I was in a situation in a youth support group where I was having a really hard time, and I was in my early 20s, and it was an ostomy support group, and I was surrounded by all these people who were so happy about having an ostomy. And at that point, I had just been not even dumped by this guy. He just stopped talking to me or seeing me because he found out I hadn't asked me. But I'm surrounded by all these people who are really happy and all this stuff, and I'm going, how are you guys all, like, so happy about having an asked me? And I found out that most of them were happy because the asked me cured them from whatever was, most of them had some sort of cancer or irritable bowel or Crohn's, and the ostomy improved their life immensely. And but nobody was like me, and I'm going, well, I'm not finding much support here because nobody seems to understand that it sucks. And that's what I don't want you guys to think. I don't want you guys to think that I don't think it sucks, because it does. It can be really hard. I'm lucky enough that I have found somebody who has decided to make me their life partner and travel life with me. But for many, 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 many years, I didn't think that was going to happen. I actually thought I was going to be single for the rest of my life. I thought I was going to be living under my parents' roof for the rest of my life. And I actually got to the point where I accepted that. And I use this phrase a lot, but I mourned the thought of, you know, getting married. I mourned the thought of living completely independently in my own home. And shortly after I came to accept that those weren't in my future, my world got flipped upside down, and I was able to move out on my own with the help of my parents. I shouldn't say on my own completely, but with the financial help of my parents, I was able to move out and rented a small place. And a little while after that, someone who had a very big impact on me when I was in high school came back into my life, and now he and I have been together since. But if you had asked me 5 years ago what my life would have looked like, I would have said I wouldn't be working. I would be living under my parents' house. I'd be single, and I'd have a couple of friends, but otherwise I would, you know, my support system would be my family, and that would be about it. And now, 5 years later, I am, well, technically under my mom's roof, but that's a long story, and it's only temporary. But I'm with a wonderful man, and I'm now volunteering for AGMD, and I have a huge support system with the people that I have met through AGMD. And it's those little things in life that, you know, that happen that can turn your world upside down. Like I was saying before, you know, the one thing that I want people to know too is, you know, you gotta keep as much keep as much of your own power over things as you can, because there is so much that this disease takes away. But if you can, you know, keep control over certain things in your life, it really does help to accept the things that you don't have control over. Even things like taking care of, you know, certain aspects of your own health. For me, it's taking care of my central line and taking care of my ostomy. That gives me my independence. Other people might be taking care of their J-tube or their G-tube, or making their own doctor's appointments. Things like that that just give you that little bit of control over your own life that make the biggest impacts.
Brittany, can I just interject
mm-hmm.
for a minute?
Yes.
First, I want to ask if anybody wants to jump in.
Yeah.
And apparently they're still quiet, just absorbing all of this dialogue. But can you keep on bringing up about ostomy? Can you explain it to those who may not know what it is?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. An ostomy, there's several different types, but an ostomy is when part of your intestine usually is taken out, and the end from where they've, you know, cut is brought to the surface of the abdomen, and stitched into place, and then a bag is put over that, and that is how waste comes out. And there's two different types. A colostomy is when that cut is made in the colon, hence colostomy, and the colon is then brought up to the surface. Or an ileostomy is when it's part of the small bowel that's brought up to the surface, usually in the area of the ileum, hence the word. And it's done for several reasons, depending on, you know, the patient. Mine was because when I was a baby, they thought I had an obstruction in my colon, so they took me into surgery. And although they didn't find an obstruction, they also didn't find these cells in my intestine called ganglion cells. And those ganglion cells are needed to absorb and to basically make the intestines function properly. So they took out part of my colon until they found those cells. This happened several times, which is why I ended up with an ileostomy. And that is what I now live with. Does anybody, you know, with living with these kind of diseases, does anybody find that maybe the treatment or treatments or even like the symptoms are worse than necessarily the disease itself? No? Wow, you guys are quiet today.
I have a feeling, I don't know why, but so many young adults are a little bit shy on the program or quiet, and I'm just thrilled that you're on the call listening in, and because I'm confident that you will gain something by listening in, and hopefully, you know, at one point you'll find the courage or the words to jump in. I know it can be very intimidating, but we're all here to support each other, and you know, it, perhaps if you're not speaking on this call, there may be another one that you might want to jump in. And that brings me to another point, not to detour a bit, but
no.
Brittany, some people, they're either new to all of this and they're afraid. That fear is a big factor, so maybe you can address the fear, but not only the fear, they're afraid to tell people, or they are telling people and they're not getting a reaction that they would hope. Can you talk a little bit more about that, too?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of fear that comes along with having an illness, and a lot of fear that comes with, you know, not having a diagnosis, too. There's a lot of unknown. If you are listening to this call, you may have you probably have a diagnosis of some sort that has led you here. But there's a lot of fear going in, not having the diagnosis, and then having to go through all of these tests and procedures and scary things, medications, treatments that are so foreign and so new to you that you don't know what to do from one moment to the next. And unfortunately, there's, you know, a lot of times, sure, a doctor will tell you what, you know, is going to happen for a procedure, but they don't tell you the emotional aspect that goes along with it. And there's a lot of fear that a lot of people have, and, you know, I still have experience, and I think most people will for a long time, is the fear of who do you tell, how much do you tell, when you tell. Do you share it with everybody, or do you share it with nobody? Are you the kind of person who, you know, is normally a very sociable person and talks about, you know, all these kind of things in your life, but when it comes to your disease, you don't want to talk about it at all, and that's fine. Everybody has to find what level of comfort it suits them. I'm pretty open, but I also went through a time where I didn't talk about it with anybody. I found that for me, I find it better when I feel better when I do talk about it, when I do share my experiences. A lot of times I, you know, when something new happens or I'm not doing so well physically, I don't share that with everybody, but I do share it with, you know, maybe that one close person in my life, and that gives me the time to pardon the word that I'm going to use here, but digest it and kind of come to terms with it, and then maybe I can then talk about it to other people. A lot of times talking about it can help you to understand what's going on, to wrap your head around it, to work it out for yourself even if you don't, you know, necessarily, you know, have something specific in mind to talk about, but just talking about other things can help you understand or deal with, you know, your fears. I found, and I know a lot of people find, that writing helps a lot. Journaling, just jotting down those feelings that you're feeling, because it's okay to feel whatever you're feeling. The fear is very real. Sorry, it's very real. There's fear about, you know, so much of your life when you have chronic illness. Fear of telling people, of them understanding, telling family members. Like I said, with all the different tests and procedures, not knowing what's going to come in the future. I think that's what that is a big fear for many people, is not knowing what's going to come in the future. And what happens if, you know, your disease progresses? You know, how are you going to manage that? How are you going to deal with that fear? And I know for myself, there's been times where my disease has progressed really rapidly, and then there's been times where it's kind of plateaued and I've remained, you know, the same for a while. But you never know. And that fear is, you know, always there for that. And I think it's important to know that being on these calls and listening in, and even if you don't, you know, even if you don't talk, or, you know, you just want to hang back and listen to the stories that we have to tell, it might get you guys thinking a little bit about, you know, what you're feeling yourself. Sometimes you don't know what you're feeling. You can't put words to what you're feeling. You just know that you're feeling something. And that's all right. That's completely normal to just, you know, try to work out what it is you are feeling and take that time to figure it out for yourself. And different times you can feel different things. But I'm glad that everybody is on these calls, or I'm glad that you guys have made it to these calls, because that's a big step. A lot of people don't even make that step. There's a fear of knowing or of talking to other people who have had it, who have your disease, and maybe be in the later stages of it, or you know, have a different severity or things like that. And I know for myself, there's a time where I didn't want to talk to anybody else with my disease because I was afraid of what I might find. I might find that people don't do very well. I might find that life doesn't look so well for them. And I found that in some people that was the case, but in a lot of other people there wasn't. And everything is, you know, different for each individual. I know we're getting close to the end, so I just want to give everybody an opportunity to talk about anything that they would like to, if anybody would like to speak.
So, Brittany, I want to just mention something that you had said, and perhaps Laura might be able to. Laura, are you still there? Laura?
Yep. Yes.
I'm finding that oftentimes, especially young adults, are more apt to communicate with each other on social media than they are on a telephone program like this. And I don't know the reasons why. Laura, maybe you can speak about that because you're always on that social media.
I believe that a lot of people, you can go there. If you're afraid of anything, you're anonymous, really. I mean, you have a name, isn't always your real name. You're anonymous, but you can, there's so many people on a call like this, and I think on social media, because that's such a strong thing for young adults, because you guys are brought up with it, kind of thing, it's easier to do that and be able to talk to a lot of people that have it, or, you know, the same type of thing, than it is to actually speak about it. But having had this disease, for gastroparesis, for 16 years, I can tell you one of the best things is to get it off your chest. Mm-hmm. My poor dog, I talk to that poor dog all the time, but it's just talking it out. You know, and the poor, thank goodness he can't talk, but, you know, it's getting it out of you.
Thank goodness talk. Boy, if I saw you with that St. Patrick's Day little gear you had on, I can only imagine what he's saying to you.
Oh, yeah. But social media, I think, is just it's an easier route in a lot of ways for young adults, because that's what they do. That's what, you know, for older folks, well, it's something we're learning, some of us still. But for, you know, your generations, it's the way to go. It's the way you do things. So it's easy to jump around, and I think it's just so much easier because you are not physically standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes that's a bad thing. People will say things they shouldn't, because they're not standing there. However, you know, it's an easy way to go find information, get in a group, just look. You don't even have to post to anybody. Just look. Mm-hmm. And you can see so many different people that have the same symptoms, very similar, same disease. And to feel not alone and not the only one is one of the biggest ways to our only way is to be able to accept a disease, any chronic illness.
But that human touch, like a program like this, can be so instrumental because it brings out that confidence to talk. It also helps other people when you talk. And in addition, it's empowering as a patient to be able to speak about your illness to other people versus hiding behind the screen. Brittany, we only have like a couple minutes. Thanks, Laura.
Speaking of the social media, I don't, if you guys are on social media and you are interested in talking, we do have a group on Inspire, and you can find out more about that through the AGMD website. And that is a great place that you can maybe feel more comfortable to share your experience in a more kind of social media setting, and be able to, you know, share experiences there too, and maybe get some other experiences. And I just appreciate everybody who is on this call and listened to me today. Hopefully Andrew will be back next time. And if anyone needs to get a hold of AGMD, you can always go to their website. And I wish everybody a wonderful day and a wonderful week. And thank you again for listening to me. You will all be in my thoughts all week or all month. And I hope that you Join us again next month. And just a reminder that tomorrow is also the call for gastroparesis and a separate one for pseudo-obstruction disease. Mary Angela, do you want to say anything else?
Well, I just want to thank you, Brittany, for doing this on such short notice but with such eloquence and professionalism. So I appreciate that and your willingness to step up. Laura, I always appreciate everything that you do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as I close all these programs, it is all of you who are the inspiration behind AGMD. You're the motor that runs this. This organization is not about one person. It's not about egos. It's about all of you. And it is just the vehicle and the voice to for all of you people who are suffering every moment of every day. God bless you, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brittany.
Thank you.
Thank you.